Welcome to episode 7 of Book Banter. I'm your host, Alex C. Talander. And in this episode, you'll be hearing my recent interview with Mary Roach, author of Stiff, The Curious Lies of Human Cadavers, Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife, and her new book, Bonk, The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex, which is now out in paperback. But we'll begin first with my review of Bonk, followed by the interview with Mary Roach, and that will be followed by a book review of Blueberry Girl by Neil Gaiman, illustrated by Charles Vess. And now we begin with my review of Bonk, The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex by Mary Roach. We are now 9 years into the 21st century, and the world has made many great strides in areas like medicine, anthropology, sociology, politics, and increasing our knowledge and respect for our planet and the many different peoples who live on it. And yet the United States is still a country that views sex as an act to be hidden behind closed doors, performed infrequently, preferably for the purpose of reproduction, and as quick as easily dispensed with. In the May issue of the Journal of Sexual Medicine, a survey of sex therapists concluded the optimal amount of time for sexual intercourse was 3 to 13 minutes. Now Mary Roach, author of the best-selling Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers, and Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife, has turned her scientific mind to an act that can only be performed in specific ways according to laws in certain U.S. states. The empirical study of sexual intercourse has certainly come a long way since humanity began having problems with performing the act, and Roach does a fantastic job of showing just how much work and research has been performed in the name of science on the subject of sex. While the author does go back to the days of ancient Greece, Bonk is not arranged chronologically, but rather by subjects, ranging from human sexual response to how the shape, size, and placement of the sexual organs can vary from person to person, and how this affects people having sex, to sex toys and devices, to what exactly is going on biologically during an orgasm. Roach continues as she did with Stiff to turn off readers as she goes into detail on what takes place during penis surgery, having seen it performed before her very eyes, as well as revealing the scientific fact that because an orgasm is essentially a reflexive response to specific stimuli over time, a dead body would be able to have one. Roach makes a giant leap for humankind into the world of sexual study in volunteering herself and her husband to be studied scientifically while performing intercourse. Just as in the author's other books, Bonk is an eye-opener for readers, no matter their background. After absorbing it cover to cover, one feels educated enough to make diagnoses for those experiencing sexual dysfunction. But then this may be one of the reasons Roach wrote the book, for those too ashamed to seek clinical help. She makes her point clear that sex isn't something to be hidden, especially when problems affect people's everyday lives. There's a group to help everyone, even a special one for the disabled, who are unable to have sex in ordinary ways, and offer advice and help in maintaining a healthy sexual relationship. After finishing Bonk, one can see how this subject has been taboo for so long, and this continues to be the case with the former U.S. administration being an advocate of abstinence over contraceptives. But at the same time, it is clear that many people over the years have devoted their lives to the scientific study of sex, and here we see a different world of those who want to help and educate others. Ultimately, whatever goes on between consenting human beings behind closed doors is their business, but is there any reason why it shouldn't be enjoyable? And now my interview with Mary Roach. I was able to meet up and talk with Mary Roach during her Bonk paperback tour on April 23rd.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Sure.
First of all.
Yeah. Sure.
What got you into writing?
Oh, what got me into writing? Graduating in the midst of a recession with no job skills and a degree in psychology that I had no interest in pursuing. That's basically, what can I do? I could edit, and I did that for a while, and I sucked at it. And then I thought, all right, well, writing, we'll try that. So, and I've
been doing it ever since?
Yeah, in one form or another, yeah.
So how did you get started writing books then?
Oh, I got started writing books on because I was shamed into it, basically. I worked at this office collection of writers, The Grotto, mm-hmm. in San Francisco. And a few of us every year would make this list of predictions. We get together on New Year's, the week of New Year's, make predictions for other people for the year, you know, where they'll be. And someone made the prediction, Mary will have a book contract. And I kind of forgot about it, and then October came around, and I remembered, okay, I've got three months to pull together a book proposal and get a contract so that I can, you know, when we meet in January, say, yeah, I did get the contract. So literally, that was what lit the fire under my butt.
And then where did you get the idea for Stiff?
That came from, I was doing a column for Salon.com around that time, and I sort of covered health, medicine, the human body in a sort of quirky and different way. And I had three columns that had to do with cadaver research, and they got very high hit rates. And I was talking with an agent around that time, and also thinking, I need to do a book proposal fast because of the bet.
And you seem to be very thorough in your research, too, so you probably had a lot of that done already.
Oh, I had very little done. I didn't know what the heck I was talking about. I wrote a proposal with very little information, really. And so that was really how it came about.
And then so how did you go about researching it?
Well, I had a little bit. I had a bunch of research from the column, because I was actually thinking of branching out and doing a dead person-related column, which it never came to pass. But I had started doing some research for that, and then just spent a couple of weeks just sort of poking around and sending out some emails, really pretty sketchy stuff.
Do you have a science background to help you in this, writing nonfiction like this?
No, I have a BA in psychology, and I don't, you'll notice I don't cover the difficult sciences. I am not covering chemistry or geology or I did wander into quantum mechanics for about 20 pages with mixed results in my second book.
And then when did you decide you wanted to do Spook?
Spook was an idea that I got from two things I wrote about in Stiff. The chapter that had to do with people poking around in dead bodies to find the soul. And also Duncan McDougall, a favorite character of mine, this guy, physician around 1907, weighing people as they died, looking for the needle to go down just a little bit to see if he could prove that the soul had substance. Yeah. So that led me to Spook.
And then did you use any do a different sort of research for Spook? Is it a little harder to get the information on it?
Well, same sort of approach as always, but Spook was, I was trying to stick to academic-based research, but there's not a lot of universities anymore who are doing paranormal. University of Virginia, paranormal psychology is not well-funded
right.
in this country. The University of Virginia has a huge grant because Chester Carlson, the inventor of the Xerox machine, left millions of dollars
specifically for
research into the persistence of the personality
after death.
Very, very specific. University of Virginia, the new president.
Was that because it was like a hobby of his that he...
It's his wife.
Oh, yes. Wow. Okay.
I think he may have been interested too, but his wife was the main impetus there. And he left all this money in the University of Virginia, so they kind of turn a blind eye to it, and they say, please don't talk to the press, you people doing parapsychology. Go about your business. You bring in money. So, and then University of Arizona, or was it Arizona State? Maybe Arizona State, I forget. So that was a little challenging, because I was trying to find legitimate, quote-unquote,
right.
legitimate academic researchers, scientists, and there are not that many.
And then when and how did you decide you wanted to do Bonk?
Oh, Bonk, I remember the moment exactly when I realized that this was the next book. I was reading an old copy of Film Quarterly, and for the life of me, I can't remember why I was reading an old copy of Film Quarterly. Not that there's anything wrong with it. And there was a reference to the colposcopic films of Masters and Johnson. I thought, well, colposcopy, that's when they take a piece of your cervix. And does that mean
what
they were filming?
What
I think it means? And I did a little research, probably just went on Wikipedia. I don't remember. And in fact, yes, Masters and Johnson did make films like recording a woman's sexual response from the inside with a penis camera, essentially. So that was the moment where I thought, okay, that's the next book.
Love story, yeah.
That's got to be the next book, sex research.
Which of these books would you say was the easiest and which was the hardest to research?
Well, they all had their unique challenges. Stiff, I was dealing with a population of folks who are not really comfortable being in the spotlight, people who work with cadavers. Yeah, they would rather not have the public watch them. because the public tends to misunderstand what they're doing and not see why it's necessary.
Jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, so that took a little convincing. And then Spook was difficult in that the reason I mentioned before, trying to find someone who wasn't sort of too fringy for my taste, someone to find enough people to fill the book. And then Bonk, we had the unique problem of trying to be allowed to be there when research is happening. If you're studying arousal and orgasm, if you're a researcher and that's what you do, you don't necessarily want a journalist with a reporter's notebook in the corner saying, "You just pretend I'm not here." Just pretend I'm not here. So that was a little challenging.
And what do you want readers to get out of reading Bonk?
I would love readers to number one, just have a lot of fun and learn something. But also, I think I'm a big believer in the importance of sex research. Even though, you know, everyone knows how to have sex, so they tend to think, why would you need to study the physiology of sex? It's just instinct. But I think that's kind of silly, because, you know, anatomy and physiology really are the foundation of medicine. And if you don't understand how a system works, then you can't hope to ever help anybody when that system doesn't work. And just basically, knowledge is power, and I think it's, not that that's my main goal in writing the book, but I do want to make the case that it is important work, and these people who've done it have faced such challenges.
Right.
Because everyone thinks they're perverts, or scoffs at them, or thinks it's a waste of money, etc. Just an appreciation of what some of those folks went through.
And did you have any alternate titles you had for Bonk, or was it always going to be called Bonk?
Well, Bonk was the original title on the book proposal. We did consider some others. Boink, of course, was under consideration, and I do hear regularly from people who believe the title should be Boink, and that I've misspelled the title in the book. And I actually hand out at readings, I hand out a little peel and stick letter I. People, if they wish, they can change the letter the way they want it. But to me, boink is a kind of a cartoony word.
Mm-hmm.
Bonk is a little more onomatopoetic. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like bonk.
Yeah.
It's more
punch to it.
Exactly, a little more kick to it.
And does the paperback edition of Bonk have anything extra that the hardcover didn't?
It has those funny questions at the back.
The little, like, reader's
the
guide
yes,
and stuff.
Yes, which I don't know how to answer.
After doing this book and donating your body to science, do you feel like you've done it all?
You mean for the...
Yeah.
Yeah, the Dr. Dang chapter, yes. Yeah, there's pretty much nothing left to do now in terms of, you know, I dare you to, you know,
what heck can you top it?
how am I gonna top that? I guess I can retire now.
And then when you in each of your books, you have a very unique voice that you use that it's kind of conversational, and you're really good at getting people to open up, it feels like, and really share their viewpoints. Is this an intentional thing on your part? Are you looking to make it more open to readers in that way?
It's just the way I've always written. I think it's how I enjoy doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
It's more fun for me, and I guess it's also more fun for the reader. But
right.
It wasn't any kind of strategy. I'm not nearly...
Because it makes it much more less like a textbook than more like a fun book you're reading in that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I certainly do want the books to be fun, because if it's fun, people are more likely to want to read it and buy it. Not that I care if people buy my book. But it wasn't, I don't really strategize or kind of think through things in a marketing way. I'm not nearly organized enough for that. So it's always, back when I was writing for Salon, and even before, it's pretty much been my, it's just me.
And then what do you have planned for your next book?
Oh, the next book has to do with astronauts and all the kind of...
I was just going to say, when you said, how can you top this, I said, space? There you go.
Yeah, true. Well, I'm not actually going, I was on a waitlist flight, which was fabulous, but... I won't actually have been in orbit for this book, which is kind of disappointing, but it's a little expensive. A little out of my budget right now.
So it's about astronauts?
Well, and all the kind of roachable aspects of the early days of aerospace, which is a really interesting, weird time when people were kind of wringing their hands and going, what if the eyeball completely changes shape and they can't see? What if they can't swallow? What if they can't go to the bathroom? And they were like, people were just dipping their toes in. Because it was really scary. I mean, space, who knew what was up there? And we were throwing human beings up into
I saw that program when we left Earth. Yeah. They gave a lot of details into that. Yeah. It's just a fascinating look into the early days of the space race.
It really was an amazing time. And it's still, there's still an element of that, because these days everything that is done in space by space agencies is so carefully rehearsed and planned out here, because it is such a phenomenally dangerous endeavor that you really do have to, I mean, they rehearse expeditions on the moon like 10 years ahead of time up in the Arctic.
Right.
Yeah, and so I'm sort of leaving for space without going, without leaving Earth.
Experience you vicariously.
Yeah, by going on these wacky simulated missions that go on.
I know you're going to talk about the future of the space race, too, because I know they're shutting down the shuttle.
Yeah, not too much policy stuff. The other thing is that they change their tune every 10 days, you know. This is the end of the shuttle. No, we're going to keep doing it. No, we're going to use Soyuz. No, it's the shuttle. No, we don't know.
And with the funding and everything,
the funding is completely up in the air. So I'm not trying to be too specific about the political stuff, because by the time the book comes out, it'll be completely different.
And outdated.
And outdated, yes.
How about, do you have any more ideas for future books you plan on doing?
But they're so larval right now that I can't really even. I do have a couple, but I don't even know. I mean, I'm always open to ideas. Okay. Send me ideas.
And do you ever see yourself? Writing fiction?
No, I don't have any imagination at all. I can't imagine how people do that. I think the two skills, fiction and nonfiction, are almost. Well, I think anybody who writes fiction can probably write nonfiction.
Okay. Because the people I've asked who write fiction and who I ask if they want to do nonfiction, they say the same thing. They would never want to attempt it, no. And these are the nonfiction people.
Because I think it's.
And they're happy making up stories and not telling the truth.
I think fiction sounds so much harder. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm a person who goes out and gathers. Stuff, a big pile of stuff, and then build something with it. And where would I be without my pile of stuff? I don't know. I don't know how they do it.
And then, in addition to your books, do you have any new articles coming out? Are you still doing your columns and stuff like that?
Not doing any magazine work right now, because I've got a kind of deadline breathing down my neck. So, no, nothing at the moment.
And then, do you have a set writing schedule you keep to?
I write when I have enough stuff for a chapter. I tend to write the chapter as soon as I have the material and the information, even though I don't know exactly where it'll fit in the book, which means I have to go back and change the beginning and end a bit to make it fit. But I don't really have a schedule, like I write a certain time of day.
Once you've got the material, you just write it.
Yeah, I start writing, and I can only write a few hours a day. I can't do a whole day. I don't have it in me.
And do you have any advice for writers looking to get published?
Books, you mean? Books?
Sort of like nonfiction in your case.
Nonfiction, yes. I would say not to wait as long as I did, and to have more faith in your own ideas. I think that people tend to get scared off by, they think, well, this would be an interesting book, and then someone, often a voice in their own head, says, no, that's just a magazine. You can't do a whole book on that. Who would read a whole book on fill in the blank? But you can say that about just about any nonfiction book. You know, you could imagine there was a time when someone said, who would buy a book, for example, about cadavers?
Yeah.
Who's going to go into a bookstore and buy that book? So you can talk yourself out of it. And because you're not being paid to write a proposal, it's very easy to talk yourself out of it. So Stop talking yourself
out of
it.
Be confident. Just do your gun.
Just do it. Yeah. Not to sound like a sneaker ad.
And what do you like to do in your spare time?
I have no spare time.
So work then.
I'm a bit obsessive these days.
So you don't take vacations either?
My research ends up being, because I travel a fair amount, mm-hmm. so I feel, to me, the idea of preparing for a trip and getting stuff ready and putting stuff on hold for the trip is more stressful than
mm-hmm.
than a vacation should be.
Combining the two or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't go.
Plus, you must obviously enjoy it, so that way it's not.
Yeah, and I can't. I'm always dependent on the researcher's schedule, so I am always. It's hard for me to plan ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't take vacations very often.
What do you like to read? Do you have time to read?
Here again, the thing with books, writing books, is that it leaves very little time mm-hmm. for reading books. I am often reading books for my own books, or books I'm reviewing. I review books for the Times, and so I'm. Sometimes there's that book, or I'm reading a book that I'm blurbing. So, and I try to keep up with my New Yorkers, and then it doesn't leave a lot of time. So I read both fiction and nonfiction. I can tell you the books that I've picked up and started. I recently picked up and started and didn't have time to finish The Yiddish Policeman's Ball. I loved it when I read.
Union, Michael Chabon?
Yeah, I recently picked up and started and liked and put down Middlesex. I recently, the list goes on.
I heard the ending wasn't too good with that, so maybe you were doing good.
Maybe I should just read the first 50 pages of all these books.
Until you get bored with it.
Mm-hmm.
And how about TV? Do you have any time for TV? Do you have a favorite TV show?
Well, I love Flight of the Conchords, which I don't get HBO, so we get it on Netflix.
Right,
I'm always excited when a new season.
They're done with season 3 now, so that should be coming out soon.
I can't wait. That's my favorite right now. I like also Curb Your Enthusiasm again when it comes out on Netflix. Daily Show and Colbert eating dinner, that's on. They're brilliant, endlessly brilliant. So that's really it for these days. Yeah.
And then for my last question, when you die, how will you be disposing of your body? Will you be donating it to science? Do you know how you want to be buried?
I pretty much have to donate it to science, don't I? I think so.
Have you signed the contract or something?
I have two forms, one from Stanford and one from UCSF, which are your two options in the Bay Area, basically. And I have the forms, and I'm like a high school senior. I haven't actually made up my mind where I want to go. I feel like I should visit the campus and see what they have to offer.
what they can sell you on.
See how the view is in the anatomy lab, and how are the facilities and the dorms. So I have...
Check the dining hall.
Check out the dining hall. I have the intent to do that, but I have not yet signed the papers.
Okay, well, thank you very much for doing the interview.
And that was my interview with author Mary Roach. You don't have to be loony about books just to love reading. Bookloons is your corner bookstore in the Global Village, with columns and reviews in genres including classics, contemporary, fantasy, mystery, nonfiction, romance, science fiction, travel, and tales for teens and young readers. Bookloons updates every 10 days and currently has almost 11,000 reviews. To find out more, go to bookloons.com. And as we approach the end of the episode, we have my book review of Blueberry Girl by Neil Gaiman, illustrated by Charles Vest. Writer Neil Gaiman and illustrator Charles Vest have collaborated on incredible works in the past with Sandman and Stardust. Their latest, Blueberry Girl, began as a beautiful and positive wish for a friend of Gaiman's, a mother-to-be. Now, with Gaiman's carefully chosen words and the lush, fresh, colorful, and moving art of Charles Vest, everyone can enjoy this tale. It is the story of a young girl, a baby at first, who must grow to adulthood and is wished on every step of the way to be treated well, to experience life to its fullest, and to follow her dreams, to have good times and bad, highs and lows. Gaiman opens with classic mythology. Ladies of light and ladies of darkness, and ladies of never you mind, this is a prayer for a blueberry girl. a clear reference to the Fates. There's even a quaint fairy tale reference, Keeper from Spindles and Sleeps at 16. Blueberry Girl is a book to be cherished and kept for generations, passed down from mother to daughter to granddaughter. It is a story to inspire the best in a young girl and give parents the utmost hope and respect for her. This fable will only get better each time you read it or tell it to a young one. And that brings us to the episode of Book Banter. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to drop me a line at all, you can email me at alexctalander@gmail.com. Also, if you'd like to join the Book Banter mailing list, just send an email to bookbanterpodcast@gmail.com. You'll be able to get all the updates and news about Book Banter in upcoming episodes. As for now, I will see you next time in Episode 8 with my interview with Daniel Suarez, author of the sci-fi thriller Demon. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.